The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. 4 minutes past nine on this Monday and we're into March. It's the 2nd of March 2026. How are you all keeping? I hope you had a fantastic weekend. If you were working, I hope that went okay for you. If you were off, I hope you enjoyed that too. There was quite a lot happening over the weekend. There were confirmations on and a lot of people away watching sport and all that type of stuff. So hopefully it was good for you. Last night we had a fantastic night, the Highland Radio Hospitality Awards. 500 plus people packed into the Jackson's Hotel. And as I said to Lee there just before nine, such a fantastic setup they have there. And of course a fantastic setup the crew here at Highland have in running a fantastic competition. Yeah, a lot of fantastic in there, but not competition, but event. And great to see so many amazing Donegal businesses getting the just desserts. You know, from the best burger to the best hotel restaurant to the best breakfast to the best bar person right across the country, and really worthy winners as well too. So well done to all. Fantastic event. I hope you enjoyed it. I suspect if you were at it, you might not listen to this live. But anyway, there you go. An awful lot of coverage, as you can imagine, in today's newspapers about the situation in the Middle East. On Saturday, the United States and Israel decided to launch, they would call it preemptive attacks on Iran. Very quickly, Iran responded, and they didn't just respond by firing rockets towards Israel. They responded by firing rockets all over the place, Dubai, Bahrain, the UAE, everywhere really effectively in that region. And it's a very safe space ordinarily, and an awful lot of 10,000 odd Irish people over there, many, many, there's thousands from Donegal living in that region as well. So it was really quite concerning. And we spoke to over the weekend between my own socials and Highland Radio, the Highland Radio website. We talked to a number of people over there who were worried. You know, you can imagine you're living in this blissful place, Dubai, living the dream. For an example, it was Dubai. It's not just Dubai, but that's where I was speaking to people from. And next thing you know, missiles above your head are being intercepted. Some missiles are hitting their targets or drones. Debris falling, and it must feel otherworldly. It's exactly the same as if it were happening here. You do not expect it to happen. They weren't expecting it to happen. And obviously a lot of people in this part of the world worried because they've got loved ones over there. I posted quite a lot of imagery and interviews from people over there. They wanted the people at home to understand what was going on. Perhaps understandably, some people were saying, you can't post that, you know, we're worried sick. But if you don't look at something, it doesn't mean it's not happening either. And there was wall-to-wall coverage 24-7 everywhere. And I understand that people were peed off a little bit with me, some people. But, you know, these are our people too. And it's important that what they're going through is recognised at home. We'll hear some of those interviews a little later on as well. There's a lot of people who transit through the airport in Dubai, for an example, or Doha. A lot of people were on holidays. Maybe you were on a plane that was turned back just as this all erupted. If you want to speak to us about any of that, or if you're listening on your phone over there wondering if there's any news at home or what's going on, maybe you're stuck there. We don't know how long this is going to last for. We don't know when airspace will open again, and there aren't any other options. We have the Department of Foreign Affairs saying if you're in that region, stay where you are. Don't try and get into Omar and find a way home, because they can't guarantee your safety. They can't guarantee your safety anyway. What they're saying is you know, make sure that you stay where you are, follow the local advice, and just be careful. That's the only advice they can give. And we have no real plan as to how to get people who are at holiday on holidays at home. I don't imagine, maybe I'm wrong, I don't think people that are living there are all of a sudden looking to get out of there. Maybe they are. That's not the impression I was getting from those I was speaking. Like everything, this will pass. So anyway, let's read some of the coverage. A Donegal woman, this is in the Donegal News, a Donegal woman and her daughter's long-awaited trip to Australia was abruptly cut short when their flight was turned around mid-journey due to escalating tensions in the Middle East. Bernadette McConnell from Castlefin and her daughter Bailey O'Loughlin were en route to visit her son Jordan and Cindy in Sydney, where he has lived for a decade. And there are people now with flights booked for a week ahead or the 15th of March or the 22nd of March, they don't really know what's going on. And some of the airlines are communicating better than others, but they don't know themselves when airspace will be reopened. The Derry News, Forever Young, Derry Unites in Sorrow. It is the very sad picture of two coffins being carried to and from a church. Derry teenagers Kevin Porter McLoon and Daniel Cullen laid to rest as Shantello community rallies in support. Two young lads, lovely, handsome young fellas, just taken from us in that awful collision in St Johnstone. And again, we wish all the strength to the family and friends to get through these tough times. So let's go to some of the national coverage of the events in the Middle East. And there are currently, this is the Irish Independent, there are currently no plans to evacuate up to 20,000 Irish citizens stranded in the Middle East as airports in Dubai, Abu Dhabi and Doha remain closed. Strikes on Iran by the US and Israel and retaliatory action has caused severe disruption to flights throughout the region and beyond, creating huge uncertainty for thousands of Irish people who work or are holidaying in the Middle East. Foreign Affairs Minister Helen McEntee said there is a large number of Irish people across the region, particularly in the United Arab Emirates, and added that it is a very distressing time for them and their families back home. She's appealed to people to register with the Department of Foreign Affairs so it can put an accurate picture of how many Irish citizens are working, resident or holidaying there or are on holiday. We have many young people who are teaching and working over there, she said. We have a much larger number than perhaps other countries of our size. And I know, speaking to a number of people in the teaching profession over there, they're working from home now, at least until Wednesday, some of them have been told. But how long might it go on? The conflict may last 4 weeks. That's according to Donald Trump. He has agreed to some conversations with Iran with a view to ending it. US President Donald Trump has suggested the conflict with Iran could go on for the next 4 weeks. So that's a postscript to that other story, which means, again, not to mention the potential loss of life in Iran and potentially surrounding areas, but it means that it could be a long time before those skies are reopened again. We also have Irish troops in the region. Irish troops stationed in the Middle East have been forced to take shelter in bunkers as Iran steps up retaliation against Israel and the US for the assassination of their supreme leader. There are approximately 380 troops, Irish troops, in various bases in the Middle East. This includes 12 troops with the United Nations Truce Supervision Organization stationed in Syria, Jordan, Lebanon and Israel as peace monitors. Another three officers are stationed in the United Nations Disengagement Observation Force in the Golan Heights in Syria, just across the Israeli border. Irish troops from UNDOF and UNTSO missions are forced to take shelter in bunkers, a process known as groundhog or groundbog. Groundhog it is, in fact, sorry. And of course, too, we are seeing the exchange of fire between the Lebanon and Israel as well. You know, so what are the consequences of this for you and I? Obviously, you know, people feel this in more personal ways, but one of the ways, and Iran were keen for this to happen, is the increase in the cost of fuel. And unfortunately, we're going to feel that here. We already have locked in fuel rises because of carbon taxes, etc. But 20% of the world's oil moves through a strait that Iran has now closed. So fuel prices have gone up. You do wonder who had prior knowledge of this and might have been able to bet on oil, to bet on gold, which has gone through the roof again, and to bet on the US dollar as well. It's crazy, isn't it? The US invades another country, takes out its leader, continues to bomb it to oblivion, and the dollar increases in value, you know? Fuel prices are expected to surge. This is the Irish Daily Mail. Fuel prices are expected to surge at forecourt pumps over the coming days following the US and Israeli attacks on Iran. Now, what we do know is prices go up very quickly. They're very slow to come down. Fuels for Ireland have said international oil markets have shown some movement following geopolitical developments. The organisation said that such reactions are typical when global tensions increase and reflect short-term market sentiment rather than any confirmed change in supply conditions. So the fuel companies hedge their bets really effectively, and we pick up that they are gambling, and we pay the bets. It's quite interesting, really, too, when you look at some of the conversations. You remember, was it July that Israel and the US last attacked Iran? And the whole aim of that was to completely eliminate, really, their ability to generate nuclear weapons. And we were told that was a success. So if that was so successful, it would make you wonder what this action is all about, isn't it? And I was reading up on this, as you do. And if Iran still has the ability to, enrich uranium, create nuclear weapons, apparently it's done so deep underground that you can't bomb it from the air. But there's no talk of ground troops going in. So how do you eliminate Iran's ability to make nuclear weapons? What's the purpose of it all? What's the function of it all? Right, there is some other news about, so just try to pick something else that seems interesting. I don't know if you agree or not. Pigs will be farmed for human transplant organs within 2 years to beat global donor shortages, which seems crazy. But a leading US firm revealed it intends to build a huge medical facility to rare enough porkers, which are pigs, to supply 6,000 hearts, kidneys and other vital parts per year by 2028. Kind of surreal, this, isn't it, that we would be breeding another creature just to harvest parts from it. But I suppose if you were in need of one of those, maybe you might not mind. The United Therapeutics animals leave their DNA edited or have their DNA edited to reduce the risk of rejection by a patient, and organ growth is controlled so they remain human-sized. Some 700 patients are on the transplant waiting list in Ireland, but donations are falling, which I think is where we should be focusing here. You know, there's a great image of a person lying in a grave, in a coffin. It sounds very morbid, but bear me out. And they're clutching onto their organs as if, you know, they're going to take them with them. When really we could be helping other people, I don't know. And not one member of the Defence Forces has applied for a vital overseas mission to train Ukrainian soldiers after being told they would lose out on thousands of euro that has been paid to predecessors. The paper, this is the Irish Star, but all of the tabloids seem to be the one paper now. The paper has learned that the deadline for the Defence Forces personnel to apply for the European Union's UNAM NTT mission closed last week, but nobody put their names forward. But why would you when the income from it has fallen? Yeah, like the Irish Daily Star, the Irish Mirror and the Sun now seem to be the same newspaper. I don't know what's going on there. Why publish the three? But anyway, it is what it is. Families of those who died in the Chrysler explosion have hit out at the Irish Justice Minister for rejecting a request to meet with them. Relatives campaigning for a public inquiry requested a meeting with Minister Jim O'Callaghan, but described his refusal as a slap in the face. Right, I'm joined by two guests to discuss this. Donna Harper, mother of Leona, who very sadly was killed in the Chrysler explosion. Donna, thanks so much for calling up and talking to us.
Morning, Greg.
And I also have Shauna Gallagher, who's the sister of Jessica Gallagher. Shauna, thank you very much as well. I do appreciate it. Donna, just to get an update, because the Justice Minister had previously met or spoken to families, and when I spoke to you at that time, I kind of got the sense, and it was only my sense, that, right, OK, he's listened to us, he's heard us, he understands, we're in a dialogue here, and we'll see how things go. But obviously, you wanted a subsequent meeting. I'm going to say you, I mean those affected by this. So what has changed in that relationship, do you think?
Well, I suppose, first of all, Greg, when we did get to meet him, it was only for a few moments of his time in Letterkenny. And the only reason that came about is because I had actually overheard, I think it was on your own radio station, that he was coming to Donegal. We were able to make a few phone calls, people we know. We managed to get a hold of him for a few moments. But that was only a few moments. It wasn't even a meeting. And that was just with myself and Hugh. We were expecting contact back about a meeting with the group of people that lost their loved ones and survivors and injured. Because everyone has their own worries and concerns and questions that they need to put forward to him. Then there was nothing. So I had chosen to send an email requesting this meeting. And a few weeks later, I get a reply back and they've refused it. Now, I do think that it's awful. I mean, he should be sitting down. The last meeting we had would have been with Helen McEntee as a group. And again, Helen McEntee had put promises in place that she walked away from. And then obviously Jim O'Callaghan came on board, and I think it's really important that the Minister Jim O'Callaghan needs to sit down with everybody and listen to them and their concerns and worries going forward.
And, you know, you spoke recently at a very significant event in Derry where there was lots of different organisations and groups talking about historic struggles for answers and justice and inquiries. And your attendance at that, your contribution was interesting because this is the experience of families live, if you know what I mean. So you would expect us to be learning from mistakes, wouldn't we? So you're here live saying, right, we could have another potential Stardust, we could have another potential Bloody Sunday, but we're living in the now.
Well, we're actually living in the very now. Yeah. And when I did go to Derry and I was speaking to all of them people, it was a bit shocking to hear their experiences because a lot of their experiences are the exact same as what we're going through now. They were having difficulties trying to speak to government officials and so on. Doors were being closed in their face. But then when they got so far in their fight for justice as well and accountability, they were told that we're sorry, there's apologies given to them and changes will be made. So how has their changes been made? There's no changes been made. We're sitting here in the now and we have been refused a meeting. It's just a meeting to sit down and talk about our concerns.
I was about to say that because you don't necessarily need him. It would be fantastic, but you don't necessarily need him to land with a whole plethora of stuff. It's an engagement. Shauna, from your perspective, it must be very difficult, and it is the same for Donna, but to be having to speak out publicly in sort of the space where you should be grieving, but to try and to have to speak publicly to try and get answers, it's crazy that you're having to do that, isn't it?
The whole thing has been very public. Like, the deaths were public, the grief was public. There's been no privacy, really. And there won't be for as long as it continues, that we have to continue trying to find out what happened. It kind of feels like we're not being taken seriously. And then the lack of acknowledgement, like, nobody's expecting the minister to come in and just solve the case. Mm, you know, mm-hmm. We're not asking for any interference with the criminal case that's ongoing. Just some kind of acknowledgement as to that this is happening. This is, as you're saying, this is happening now. This is our lives now. It's not historical. It's going on, and there's just no. The government and everybody was so eager to help when it happened. You know, we had politicians coming to wakes, and we had everybody wanted to fight for justice and fight for this and fight for that. And now, nearly 4 years down the line, it's just the same families just doing the same things.
It's interesting, and because the reaction from people then is important to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now the inaction is important to you.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, when we get big politicians coming up and attending wakes and funerals, and as it turns out, the cameras are there, right?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't do anything for you. Now is the time, 1, 2, 3 years removed, that this is when you need these people.
Yeah.
This is when it makes an actual difference, not when you're have the most rawest of grief. And I'm not saying that rawness is eased, but now is the time you need the support.
But the rawness sells, do you know? Mm. Like, the emotionality sells. And now when we're less obviously emotional, like physically emotional,
I know what you mean, yes.
It's harder to sell, do you know? Like, they don't have the photo opportunities, do you know? Like, nobody really wants a picture of a table full of not crying, not openly grieving people. It doesn't.
Mm. You've gone from grief to being forced to campaign.
Yeah.
What is it that you want? Like, do you accept, and I'll come back to you in a second, Donna, or you can both interact at the same time, Shauna, do you accept that that an inquiry into this might have to wait until the criminal investigation is over, or are you still of the view that both can run parallel, or what do you need to hear from the likes of Jim O'Callaghan?
We know that both can run parallel.
Yeah.
It's something that has happened in this country in the past and in England and whatever, it is something that can be done. The problem with the criminal inquiry is that it'll be a yes or no result at the end. As families and everybody else that's involved, we won't hear the nitty-gritty, we won't hear the results of the internal inquiries that have happened, and that's not going to bring any closure to any of us.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, like, we need to find out why this has happened as opposed to just the yes or no result at the end.
Yeah, because I feel, and I could be wrong, I feel like, and maybe you're the same, I could probably write on a piece of paper now mm-hmm. what the outcome of that criminal investigation will be and fold it and put it in my pocket. And it's not going to really do anything for where... What answers are needed, Donna? What needs to be looked at? What lessons could be learned? What... You know, I mean, obviously, what you're doing, this is the crazy thing, right? Your family's very sadly, and this sounds an awful way to put it, we can't bring them back, right? But we can get answers. And I know the motivation here is to maybe there's things we can do to stop other families going through what you've had to go through, right? So what needs to be looked into, Donna, in your opinion? What answers do we need?
Well, there's a lot there, Greg. There's a lot that we have for government. And obviously, the families have a lot of, I suppose, no disrespect, but outside of the media, personal things that they need answered as well by government. But there has to be changes. There has to be changes. Like, Greg, this was a massive loss of life, and it was one of the biggest things in the history of the state. Mm-hmm. So why is government not talking to the families? Why are they not looking into things about making changes about what happened down there that day? It was a suspected gas explosion. This has been done before in this country. Again, I'll go back to Raglan House in the 80s, where two people had been killed in a gas explosion. And within that, within months, the government had stepped in and they were putting changes in place and making regulations for things to happen alongside an investigation. And that was all done within 4 months. And that was in Dublin in the 80s. That was the 80s. We're in 2026. So if they were putting things for new regulations and that in the 80s, why are we in 2026 and the government aren't stepping in to try and to make changes? And there's so many, the same kind of situation in Creasley, petrol stations with apartments above. It's really important that they need to go and look at this and look at it very seriously and make changes and put, if they need to, new regulations in place around safety. You know, what other family wants to be sitting where my family is today, or Jessica and her family are today sitting, and the most grief that you can't even put into words, do you know?
Mm.
And here we are having to go on media and go on radio and
put everything out there
and
put to every, try and
that's
get,
what I was going
to
say, put everything out there and ask government to talk to us. And but I do strongly believe that, Greg, it is one of the biggest things in the history of the state.
Oh, without a doubt. Shauna, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I kind of want to add as well. Yes, this has happened. And Donna mentions about health and safety. I would love to know why the government is currently allowing the proprietor who owned the premises to continue to reapply and as if nothing has happened to open another shop and business as usual to continue, as if everything has just remained the same, when at this point we don't know. I appreciate innocent until proven guilty, but we don't actually know if the regulation was followed.
I do understand where you're coming from, because you would imagine if an inquiry and an investigation mm-hmm. can't run concurrently, how could mm-hmm. life as normal and an investigation run as normal?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It feels like money's talking.
And also to Shauna, when the obvious isn't happening, i.e. let's find out what went wrong here, because it's not about the future as well. It's a little bit like the defective blocks. What was the rules or the regs that allowed it to happen in the first instance, right? And was it ever reviewed? Did someone make a suggestion and that was ignored that could have potentially have avoided this? Mm-hmm. You know, those are the things that need to be looked at as well. Yeah. And when we're not looking at those things, or when there is a refusal, or when you're trying to shut yourself up for a while, mm-hmm. it makes you wonder, as a human, why? Well, then it makes you think something is trying to be hidden.
Yeah.
You know, and it would be so much easier for the state to understand where this is going to go. Yous aren't going to go away. So well, this is only going to begin to look more and more like some sort of a cover-up.
Yep.
Well, the thing is, Greg, like, I mean, as you probably seen, me and Sean had done interviews recently, and I had said on that, and I will say it on Highland Radio, if the Minister of Justice, Jim O'Callaghan, is listening here today, please sit down and meet with us. We really have our own concerns, questions. It's really important that he sits with us as a group and talks to us. And as you were just saying there about the defect of the blocks scandal as well, was there Micah there? We don't know either. Obviously, there's a Garda investigation going on.
Yeah, I never thought about that, actually. I didn't make that connection when I was making that connection.
You know, there's a Garda investigation going on and we are all very happy with that so far. We have no problem with that. We're waiting on the file now in March to go forward. Hopefully now that'll be a way to DPP. But
where it could sit for 10 years.
Yeah, well, we're kind of really hoping that it doesn't. But going forward with that, and there are things that need to be looked into as well, Greg. I mean, this whole country is suffering with Micah as well. Mm. And nobody knows more than our families what it's like for a building to come down and lose your child.
And I think, Shauna, from your perspective, and I understand your frustration, it has to be proven to you that Jessica's life and death mattered. Whether it is the criminal investigation, whether it is the inquiry or whatever it might be, you have to be proven. And I understand your comment about, is it going to sit in a shelf? Because you need evidence that Jessica's life and the life of everybody else was as important.
As Donna said, we've had talks with the Bloody Sunday families and the Stardust families. Like, we don't have 40 years to wait. Like, we can't.
No, who wants to? Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
We have to learn from their experiences. Mm-hmm. Maeve McLaughlin, director of the Bloody Sunday Trust, says we are offering our full support to Chrysler families. Antoinette Keegan, who's been a regular guest on this show, chair of the Stardust Victims Committee. Her sisters, Mary and Martina, died in that fire, of course. She says, we very much support the Chrysler families and understand their fight for justice. 4 years later, they should have answers as to what actually happens, and the Minister for Justice needs to be met. And I think, Donna, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's the likes of the Stardust families and others that perhaps saw what potentially could be happening here, rather than, I don't think, did you feel like, is this going to be another Stardust? Mm-hmm. Whereas you had those and what we saw in Anfield as well, that they're going, hold on a second, this looks very similar as to the beginning of our journey.
I absolutely, Greg. I suppose at the start I didn't think that, but obviously I do now, I do worry. Antoinette Keegan now, I've known her now for over a year, and we are very happy to have that friendship. Antoinette had reached out through your radio station here to get in contact with myself just over a year ago, and she was saying that it was like a mirror image. It was like a mirror image. She said she's been watching it for quite a while on media and doing interviews myself and other families, and she was saying that it was like a mirror image. So they're coming behind us to fully support us in any way that they can. Maeve McLaughlin from the Bloody Sunday also, they're fully supporting us as well. And there's John Taggart from Ballymurphy scandal and Deirdre Connolly from the post office scandal, and they're all fully supporting us
and
now.
And some of those, the battle's been 10, 20 years, some of them 50, 60. I mean, you don't want to be...
No, we don't want to be.
You know, I mean, we have to... There has to be lessons learned.
There has to be lessons learned, Greg, absolutely. And I think it's not a lot for families just to be asking the Minister, Jim O'Callaghan, to sit down and talk to us as a group. I don't think that's a lot when you've got governments coming, as Shauna had says, to the wakes and the funerals, promising on national media that they would do anything to help
no
the families.
No stone will be left unturned.
Exactly, that was what I was going to say next, Greg. That was the exact words they used, no stone will be left unturned. But here we are coming into 4 years later on media again, on radio, asking them just to meet us.
You would think in a situation like this that there would be a liaison person or something that, you know, from the government, where there'd be quarterly meetings or something.
We were promised that.
Oh, were you?
We were promised that from
I didn't know that.
From Helen McEntee.
From Helen McEntee. She
really?
When we went down to the Dáil, she had said she would set something up, and she didn't set anything up. So it feels like you're screaming into the void, do you know, like there's no connection. The only connections we have is with the other families.
Yeah.
And that's something that we've set up among ourselves. We don't have any government input. We have a couple, everybody has a Garda liaison officer, and they can only tell us what they can tell us. And like, nobody's saying the Garda aren't doing what they're supposed to do. We understand that they are, but there's no point of connection for any government for anything. It's literally just us.
Yeah. There's so much of this felt like a box ticking exercise through the whole process. We'll not get into the ins and outs of it, but certain reactions were like, okay, we need to put that in, tick. We need to close it off, tick. We need to walk away now, tick. That's the right thing to do, isn't it? Leave them to their grief. Yeah. Right, okay, listen, I think obviously you're both very powerful advocates for your family, and you're not going to let this go away. And I would think Jim would, O'Callaghan, whether it's now, I mean, I'm getting press releases of deportations every other day. Mm-hmm. That's grand, right? And that gets you into the papers, but this is important too. Shauna, thank you very much indeed. And fair play to you for being such a strong advocate for Jessica. I'm sure she's looking down on you, incredibly proud of what you're doing. Because
she'd be doing the same thing.
I know, but you never signed up for this.
No.
Any of it. And you're doing fantastic work. And Donna, obviously, look, in your grief, you've been an amazing spokesperson for your daughter, but for everyone as well. So keep that up, and we'll touch base. And we're in contact, of course, with their office to try and find out why aren't they meeting you. Mm-hmm. And I know you're sort of doing other avenues as well. But for now, both of you, Donna and Shauna, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Greg. Could I just say, Greg?
Of course you can.
Sorry, could I just say that again? The minister is listening to this. Please sit down and meet us. We aren't going away, and we will keep pushing just for that meeting. We just want to talk. We have a lot of concerns that we just want to put forward to him. And also, just before we do go, Greg, I know there's a lot of people here in Ireland that have family in Dubai, so we just want to say that our thoughts and prayers are with them all.
And just one other question. In terms of one of the connections, obviously, to Jim O'Callaghan is through, you know, two government TDs in this county. Have they made representations for you to pressure Jim O'Callaghan to meet?
No, not that we know of yet anyway. Nothing.
Right, okay. Okay, we're joined on the programme by Aaron now, who's from Strabane but has been resident in Dubai for the last 4 years working in business development. Aaron, how are you keeping? Good morning. Thanks so much. Oh, we're still calling, Aaron. I beg your pardon. We'll come back to Aaron in a second because he will be joining us in a moment, as others will, but it gives me a chance to get to some of your comments. Morning, Greg. Surely this attack on Iran would have been Israel's plan, but we hear very little from them since the war started at the weekend. I think Netanyahu is letting Trump do the talking, as Trump can't pass a camera nor a microphone to spout his ramblings. Netanyahu is keeping the head down as he knows Trump thrives in the spotlight. Good morning, Greg. My son works in Dubai, and yes, he hears the bangs and sees the smoke, but at the moment he's not overly worried about the situation, although in my opinion, with the Lebanon getting involved now, it could get a lot worse, and who knows why those American jets crashed other stronger countries could also be involved. My other son was due to go to Australia yesterday for 2 weeks, but obviously the flight was cancelled. We will take a little bit of pre-recorded audio before we go to Aaron in Strabane. It was another Aaron I spoke to, Aaron Sweeney. You would be familiar with Aaron Sweeney if you listen to this radio station, because he contested elections and was part of Youth Fine Gael. But he upped and travelled to Dubai for a different type of life, teaching over there. I caught up with him on Saturday just as this story was emerging, to get a sense of what it was like over there. He'd just actually come back from playing football, or playing hurling actually, I should say, landed back at his apartment and had a conversation with me.
Where I'm living, it's quite close to the desert. It's a wee bit further out than the main city, but it's also quite close to an American airbase, so you can still hear those explosions going off. You can see them. You can see it in the sky. But luckily for now, we're like nothing close to where we are. But we're in a watching brief, I suppose, if you want to put it that way.
I mean, obviously, you know, people would be familiar with you, your time over here and what have you. And I presumed you went over there for you know, a very alternative, perhaps, you know, fancier life, if I could put it like that. I know you work hard, don't get me wrong. This wasn't part of the package deal, though. So, you know, no. Whilst, I mean, obviously you're taking it very much in your stride, and hey, hopefully this could all blow over really, really quickly. What does it mean in terms of your life there? Or
look, I suppose, put it like this, as we're coming back from the Seventh Stadium this evening, I said it to a friend, you know, if this thing escalates and next thing there's repatriation flights, will you take one? you know, just asking, like, what do you think, what will happen? And the three people in the car, well, geez, we don't know. Like, as you just said, we've come out here for, I suppose, an experience, which we have got so far. I came out in August and I've loved life out here. But this is very surreal. And until we seen that first explosion over the head, when nightfall came at around 6 p.m. here, which was roughly about 2 p.m. at home, that was the first time that anything felt kind of real.
Paul Hackett is Vice President of the Irish Travel Agents Association and CEO of Click and Go Holidays. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Good morning, Greg.
We're in a very difficult situation, notwithstanding, obviously, that this is a very worrying geopolitical development. But in terms of any certainty, social media is full of people trying to get answers, but there simply aren't many answers out there. The Department of Foreign Affairs' advice is pretty much stay safe, stay in situ, follow local advice, and we'll have to see what happens.
And that very much is the case, Greg. And I wish, and I'm sure the people wish, that they could provide answers. But for now and for today, that is the advice. It's stay safe, stay indoors, follow local authorities' guidance, keep your phone charged, keep an eye on social media, both the local news social media and your airline social media if you're due to travel in or out of the region. There's very little that we can say to people other than that's as much as we know at this point. The airports, the airspace is closed, so flights are cancelled, so there is no travel. The Department of Foreign Affairs have very clearly advised against alternative land travel arrangements at this point. So for now, the best and safest advice is to stay put, stay safe, and stay in touch.
And people are messaging saying, you know, I'm due to fly here or there on the 14th of March. What's the situation? The reality is we heard from Donald Trump, this could go on for 3 or 4 weeks at least. We don't know what that means in terms of Doha or Dubai airports, just to use those two hubs as an example. This is open-ended, isn't it? We simply don't know when commercial flights may resume in that region.
No, there is no certainty. There is plenty of speculation, and I feel very sorry for people who have travel plans that involve travel through that UAE Middle Eastern hub of Dubai, Abu Dhabi and Doha. But everybody could equally understand that this time it is unsafe to travel within that region and within the airspace, hence the airspace being closed. So it is hard to know. Like, the only certainty we have is that we know today's flights are cancelled. And we will have to adopt a more kind of 24 hours at a time approach to this to see how it resolves, because nobody has that crystal ball and nobody can speak as to how the situation is going to evolve.
What can you do or what can be done for people who were holidaying in that region, or indeed maybe the return flights are through that region? Maybe there can be some, re-networking in the latter example. But, you know, if someone's booked a holiday, their accommodation expired yesterday, what do they do? I know some governments over there have indicated that they will cover the cost of any extended stays, but that doesn't seem to be universal.
No, and there will be more clarity, one would hope, for on that particular information. The Dubai government have said that they are covering hotel costs, but, you know, I'm not quite sure to what extent, you know, they have put parameters around that. Let's deal with the different groups of consumers, because it might be easier to deal with one at a time. So consumers who are in the region at the moment, holidaymakers who are in the region at the moment, must stay in the accommodation that they're in. There's no point in them traveling to the airport. There are no flights. If the airport is open, there's no flights taking off. They're far better off in the hotel for the time being. And that is an indefinite stay. And there is no way of moving those people out of that location at this time because the airspace is closed. And there's clear guidance from the DFA on not availing of land alternative travel. That's that particular group. consumers who are abroad at the moment globally and are due to return and transit through the UAE of Doha, Abu Dhabi and Dubai are the three primary airports that affect Irish holidaymakers and Irish travellers. Those flights will not be taking off from the destination where they are currently to bring them and connect them through to back to Ireland. So they have no flight options at all. They
must
stay in place where they are.
Is there any alternative to that that hop, Paul, if you know what I mean? You know, if you were in Australia...
Yes. You can move up through Bangkok, through Singapore, through Hong Kong and route into the UK and route into Europe and avoid that hub. There are alternative flight arrangements, and for people whose flights are cancelled or have been cancelled, those flight costs will be refunded to them. So they will, if a flight is cancelled, you have an automatic entitlement to a refund, irrespective of any of the airline and consumer protection legislation. That's just automatic. So consumers who are globally abroad, if we use that expression, and in other locations, there are alternatives for them to travel home, but it's likely that those alternatives are being very heavily booked at the moment by consumers who are rebooking flights that would have brought them on connecting flights through the Middle East.
All right.
For consumers here who are yet to travel, it's a case of wait and see, keep in touch. Nobody has definitive information beyond the next 24 hours at this stage.
Yeah. And it is, we really don't know, because Iran actually does appear to be targeting airports, even those that might have been sympathetic to their situation. So we just simply don't know. Paul, thank you.
It is a very unsatisfactory situation, Greg, give answers. But you're quite right. There are no answers at present.
I think some of the airlines are communicating better. That's up to them individually. I think communication at this point is key. Paul, thank you so very much for your time. Paul Hackett, Vice President of the Irish Travel Agents Association and CEO of Click & Go Holidays. Appreciate your time. Bernadette McConnell, a.k.a. Shabby Cheek, is with me as well.
Yeah.
Bernadette, you're in the situation where... You were on your way to Australia. What happened for you and your daughter?
Yeah. Good morning, Greg. Me and you seem to be chatting a lot.
I know.
Days.
Good to speak to you again, Bernadette.
Yeah, and you know that this trip was very, very special to us. Mm. And you know we were on route to Dubai, and we were turned around 2 hours from Dubai. So I believe we were 5 hours in the air at that stage. Greg, and the pilot just come on and said that they were turning us around due to the airspace not being safe, and we were all shocked. There were a whole lot of Irish on that flight, Greg, an awful lot of Irish, and everybody was in a holiday mode, I suppose. Nobody was really listening or looking at the news, and the minute that he said that, you could see everybody going for their earphones to get on to see what was happening. We were oblivious to it. We did not know that this... You know, I was aware that stuff was going on out there, but I didn't think it would have happened so quickly, and we were only realistically going into that airport for an hour and a half before we would get our connecting flight, Greg, you know.
So what is the emotion now? You're home. You were kept in a flight overnight down there to see if there would be any change in it. I know this for you and Bailey was a very important and dream trip. So where's the emotions at? I mean, you could have ended up being in Australia and sort of stuck there, or you could have been stuck in Dubai. So where's the emotions at?
We're very, very grateful. Extremely, extremely grateful, Greg. When we got off the flight and all, and we got to the hotel, they kept us in a hotel that night. And when we were looking at the news and all then, I was saying, thank God that we returned. Somebody was looking out for us, because we would have been stuck in Dubai if our flight, I think the flight before us got in and out very quickly. We were the next in line. We didn't. Thank God we didn't land, because we would have been stuck in Dubai. Mm-hmm. Or if we had got as far as Australia for the month, we could have been, I don't know how that would have worked out if we had been stuck in Australia and I wouldn't have got home again.
Home. All right. Listen, love to you and Bailey. And I'm glad that
you,
the best of the worst outcomes is what you received. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, Bernadette.
Yeah, really, I'm not going anywhere.
Thank you, Greg. All right, look after yourself. Lots of you messaging in this morning. Thank you very much for that. Morning, Greg. Try to price heating oil and no one can give a price. Well, we've priced several places this morning and got prices no problem, by the way, just to do a bit of research. Highland Radio should demand an answer from Jim O'Callaghan that that's what radio is for. With all due respect, I get where you're coming from. We're not in a position to demand. We can make inquiries, which we do immediately. We don't, when something comes on air, we've already done the due diligence in terms of trying to get comments from various people, etc. That's all done. That's what Caroline and assisted by Shannon do. They're very good at what they do, so trust that's what we're doing. Rightio, let us go to Brendan Devenny, who is the presenter of Highland Radio's DL Debate after a busy, busy weekend. They're always busy, aren't they? Hi, Brendan. How are you getting on?
Great. Good, man. You?
Good, I'm doing good. Donegal doing well too. Up until yesterday, I think they'd only been behind for one game for a brief spell in the first half against Kerry. Yesterday they had to battle, and much of that down was to playing a lot of that game with 14 men. But this team really can adapt on the pitch, can't it? Thanks to Jim McGuinness on the line, and ground out a draw.
Yeah, the Greg still unbeaten. It's 14 games in Ballyshannon, kept the record going there. So yeah, listen, it's great not to be beaten. Brilliant last minute two-pointer from Pater Mogan to save the day. And the bench probably sprung in was the difference, Greg. Still quite a few players missing. I mean, Shane O'Donnell, Moore, Darrell Boyle, McCaughan, Patton, Oisin Gallen, not involved yesterday. So, you know, there was chances for other lads to come in. Steve McMenamin was back in. Shane Malone started. Paul O'Hare, likes of Owen McGeehan came in as well. So it was a chance for lads to play. Now, Galway were missing a few players themselves, but they were a bit desperate for the points here. And the conditions made it a real dogfight. It was a real battle out there. And I think he showed, I think from Donegal's perspective, real battling qualities. The introduction of Michael Murphy, pivotal as ever. I mean, the shape that he's in. I think he must be the next evolution of human beings, because we're not like him. I was just with his pace and his movement. For his age, and I don't want to be good on him with that because he's in such shape. But I mean, it's
not even the age; it's the miles, right? It's the miles on the clock. That's what he's defying. Like,
it's amazing that our best ever player is now our most cap player. If you like, he's turned out the most. I mean, he equals Neil McGee's record of 184 games, so he's closing in on 200 games, which is it just seems amazing what he's done. The game yesterday, big impact coming off the bench. And listen, it was always nice to at least get a share of the spoils.
Right, we're effectively through to the final. We only need a draw from the final two games, I believe, to guarantee a spot. Mayo and Kerry then seem to be in some sort of a direct shootout for second spot. It seems crazy again that is this the only league in the world where you top the league and you don't win?
Yeah, listen, going back to my time, actually, my first year, we actually played, I got to play in the old Crow Park, show my age now, in 1998, and it was a league quarterfinal. So there actually used to be league quarterfinals, semis and finals, would you believe? And then it went to semis, and then in the end, they just picked the top two. And listen, you can make a case for that, but it does mean that there's a kind of showpiece game.
So well, who's that for? That's for a sponsor, though. We don't need that. We don't need it as fans. I don't think we need it as fans.
Well, we'll not talk about the sponsor.
No.
But, listen, Greg, I think this, in many ways, because of it's a short league like that, it's not a long league. Like, most leagues are prioritised over the championship competition. The championship, obviously, is more important than the league. So I think probably it just does give you that kind of showpiece game.
Arc. Okay. Monaghan, they're gone. 0 points have been an awful season for them. You could argue Roscommon are mathematically safe. So Armagh, Galway, Dublin battling out, really, they're still in danger. And Dublin did themselves a favour yesterday. But Armagh and Galway in the final round, it could be a winner takes all, a stay up decider.
That's it, Greg. And
I'm getting better at this analytic crap. I'm eventually going to be on the DL debate.
We'll get you on tonight.
Me and Michael McMullen.
I could have the night off, you chair. I tell you what, we'll swap shows.
You're not getting. We're not letting you free on this one yet. But no, but there are still a lot of ramifications, and it's going to get on to the final game too.
Yeah, and listen, again, like, it's only seven games, so that's why things become so tight. You've got your head-to-heads, then potential scoring difference. And yeah, a lot of people just thought automatically that it would be Roscommon and Monaghan going down. So fair play to Roscommon for some of their performances and really putting it up and to teams in the top flight. So it looks like they're going to stay safe. So one of the giants of the game is going to go down to Division 2. Listen, that's the way it is. That's what leagues are about.
It doesn't matter. It's not inconsequential because it depends on who you're playing next year and all that, right? Obviously, you're going to be covering. The ladies' side of things as well, because you have the ladies' manager James Daly on the show reflecting on what's what.
Yeah, another great one for Donegal away from home, just edging out Mayo by a point. So yeah, just want to chat to James and just see how he's made of the season so far overall, and looking into Donegal playing Tipperary next day out. So Donegal looking good for promotion there as well.
Which is not insignificant, you know, bouncing back. It's really, really good. And lots more happened as well, because there was Camogie hurling, as I've mentioned, the men and ladies all in action. All-Ireland, Galway All-Ireland winner Sean O'Donnell will be on. Gaelic Life's top sports writer Michael McMullen. John Goulday is going to be on as well. And as I've just mentioned, James Daly. So it's going to make for a very interesting show, as always, live from 7 podcast for you to listen to whenever you like. Funny enough, though, thankfully, when I was bringing you in, I brought in your empty kitchen. So I had to kick the empty kitchen out and bring you in the car.
I was pushed back. I'm actually meeting the teacher here. I'm invited on the World Book Day at St. Eunan, so you caused me a wee bit of a panic this morning.
I'm so sorry. Look at
I'm here for the Greg Hughes Show. You better believe it.
All right, look after yourself, brother. That's Brendan Devaney, presenter of the DL Debate. We had a bit of a debate on this show about Donegal County Council coming off the X platform. I didn't have an issue with it as such. It was more the fact that, you know, you're coming off a platform where there are people that you might need to reach. But I've noticed too, especially following world events, that X really is nothing compared to what it used to be. Twitter used to be a real genuine place where you felt you could get, you know, balanced, unfiltered news right off the back. And really, it's not that at all. It's just turned into a bit of a cesspit. But anyway, from Friday, as of Friday, Donegal County Council, they've suspended their presence on X. So they're only posting information on other platforms as well. So just as a wee update too, they followed through in relation to that. Right, let me take a break. Before I do so, though, I want to say hello to some very special people. Happy birthday to Alana McBride, who's in Letterkenny, from your in-laws in Creasla. Happy birthday, Alana. Hope you have a great day. Anne McDermott in Maharabeg. A big happy birthday to you, Anne, from Margaret in Burnfoot. Greg, attended Saturday night at Ungreon Theatre, Boeing, Gone, I think was the name of it. What a professional show put on by Letterkenny Musical Society. Laugh from beginning to end and great to see a full house. Well done to everyone involved in Boeing. Well done indeed. Hi, Greg, could you say a big congratulations to Rye Community Centre on the award last night? Well done and well deserved. Indeed, and they won. And also, Ungreon just mentioned, they won as well last night. There was some amazing winners all over the place as well, and it was great to see the fun and the excitement. I got a kiss as well on stage from the crew from the Navany Grill. In fact, I got 4 kisses last night. Not that I was looking, but I got 4 kisses, and every one of them was a fella. Now, that's fine, right? That is okay, you know, broadly speaking. But there you go. That's it. Not that I'm out looking for kisses, by the way. That sounds terrible. But it was one of those nights. Right. Got a message there from my mum, and you can imagine how worrying it is for her. She said to me, "Hi, Greg. My daughter is in Dubai. Her apartment was hit last night. Thankfully, she and all the people are out safe, but it's very worrying from home." Aaron is from Strabane and over in Dubai at the moment. Aaron, sorry about the issues in getting a connection to you, but we're here now. Thanks very much for taking time out of your busy day to have a quick chat to me.
No problem. How are you, Greg?
I'm good, Aaron. And what I'm trying to do is make sure people know what's going on, offer any support we can over there. but not over-amplify either, right? Because that's not helpful either. So what is the situation over there at the moment and the feeding in the sense, Aaron?
I think over the course of the weekend, Greg, it was quite a shock, to be honest. I think there is a certain level of normality that we have here day to day. And obviously the attacks are an interruption to that. So that has been distressing for a lot of people. But from what I can see from yesterday and even today, things seem to be moving normally enough. People are working from home. Shops are open. So it's quite quiet and calm at the moment, but whether or not that gets interrupted is a different story.
And when you look to the sky, are we seeing the same contrails, the same missiles being interrupted that we were witnessing on Saturday and Sunday, or is that paused for now?
We have seen some this morning, some last night as well, but it depends. This is a relatively large city as well, Greg, the 70 kilometres from top to bottom, so it depends where you are in the city. But yeah, there has still been some activity today, but it's mostly around the ports and some economic areas.
And you have to be careful, you and anyone there as well, in terms of, you know, what information you share on social media, etc. The authorities are very clear that there are very serious consequences if you were to accidentally share imagery from a month ago or to overstate or misstate what's actually happened.
Exactly.
So you have to be really careful over there, Aaron.
That's true. And look, it has to be said, all of the defense systems, any of the things that they have in place is working at the moment, which is great. But as you say, there's no tolerance here for any misinformation, that's for sure.
You've been there for 4 years. I'm not sure if this was ever on your radar, certainly not part of the plan. What's your feelings about there at the moment, Aaron, and this sort of open-ended nature of what we're witnessing?
It's a good question. I mean, look, we are in the Middle East here, but Dubai does, I'm sure for anyone who's been here or who lives here, can say that it does not feel like we are in the Middle East. This is a highly westernized society in lots of ways. But it's strange for us, for Irish people and for maybe British people, this feels like something very out of the ordinary. But for Palestinian or Lebanese or whatever friends of mine from the region, they're fairly used to this kind of action happening. So it has to be said that this is only abnormal for people who are not from this region too.
Mm. But it does kind of, we don't know really what the long-term implications might be because, you know, Dubai has traded for the longest time of being this safe and secure place. And I'm not saying it isn't. I don't want to overstate it either. But it kind of has brought home its location.
Yes, I think that is relatively true. But again, Given the situation in some of the countries around the rest of the region, I think we're in a very good place.
Mm-hmm. It hasn't made you question your future there?
No, I don't think so.
I think if it goes
on for a significant amount of time, perhaps, but no, not at this stage, Greg.
And of course, too, it's good to see the air defences are working. That's not without potential problems because of debris falling. Of course, what goes up must come down, and we have seen, I think it was Saudi Arabia, an Asian gentleman was hit by fallen debris. So you have to be conscious of that too. It does have to come down somewhere.
Yes, I think we're all under, companies are being very fair that we have work from home situations. People are not leaving their house. The roads are very, very quiet. So people are staying as safe as possible.
And finally, I'll let you back to work. Are you hearing of any people holidaying there, Aaron, that are stuck there, so to speak?
I don't know anyone personally, but I know that the government is paying for any accommodation needs that anyone has. I think there's around 20,000 or so people who were in the airport a few nights ago, but I don't know anyone personally myself here who's travelling at the moment.
Okay, look after yourself, Aaron. Thanks so much for giving us that sense of what's going on. I also spoke to another person from this region, from Donegal. This was just maybe when the attacks were slightly more intense. Here's some of my conversation with Niamh.
I mean, there was a 4-hour gap from whenever we probably heard the first set to here and now. It's just a little bit more constant. I think it's just not knowing when the next one's coming, to be honest. So every time you hear it, you get a fright. I've got a little 3-year-old, and she, just before going to bed, she kept telling us that she was scared and she was frightened, but we just kept telling her it was fireworks for Ramadan and it was nothing to panic about. We just obviously the UAE has said to only follow the official channels on things that's happening, but people are posting online saying different things, so you're not really sure what to believe and what not to believe of stuff that's happening. But the officials are keeping us updated. They're sending out messages saying that our priority is number one, trying to tell everybody to stay indoors, stay safe. I know that some places have been evacuated as well, just trying to keep everybody safe.
When you talked of the most recent two bangs, how loud are they? I mean, is it window shaking, or is it like, you know, it sounds like it's some distance away or what? I can't imagine what that must feel like.
Like, it's window shaking. And you think that it's somewhere around, so you can see everybody in the apartments around us going to their balconies to see, has it actually hit somewhere near us? Yeah, every time it happened, it's as if something has fallen from a building.
And you can hear more from Niamh on our website. It's in the listen back section. And anyone else, I know there are quite a few of you watching or listening from that part of the world. If you want to pass on any information to us, please do, because I think it brings you closer to home, really, because we treat it with the hundreds and potentially thousands of you over there. We treat it as if, you know, it was in, God forbid, Donegal Town or something. You're very much in our thoughts and very much part of the Donegal family and the story of this programme as well, too. So feel free to stay in contact with us. You can either WhatsApp us 00353 866 25000, or contact me direct on my socials, because like that mum who was chatting to earlier, something hit her daughter's apartment last night, and they all had to be evacuated. She's safe, which is good, but it feels very real. Okay. Home heating oil, these are some of the consequences. Now, in my word, the price goes up very quickly compared to how slow it is to come down. Greg, I priced home heating oil today. These are the prices I got on the 3 days. $5.75 on Saturday, $6.15 on Sunday, and $6.70 this morning. There's no way they had deliveries on these 3 days to justify these three different prices. I have a daughter in Australia at the minute. She wants home. She waited in a queue for 5 hours with Emirates and was told that she can't get a flight until the 17th of March. She checked Skyscanner and was able to get to Sydney, to Los Angeles, to London for 888. Sydney to London is coming up at €3,000. Sydney to Dublin. For anyone who wants to get home, check Skyscanner and they'll give you a way home. Back to the price of oil. Oil on Friday was $73 a barrel. $80 a barrel today, $100 per barrel today. They reckon they'll have 500 million litres less of oil sold a day because of this. The travel situation is dire for some people, but on a lighter note, it might save the Irish taxpayer money if the ministers can't get away for Paddy's Day. Yeah, I get you. Hi, Greg. My daughter is in Dubai. Her apartment was hit last night. Thankfully, all of her people are out safe. Very worrying for us at home, and that's a text I kind of get paraphrased for you a little earlier on. Stuart, hello there.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, good. You think this brings particular extra focus on the Taoiseach's visit to the United States?
Yeah, I just don't understand. Like, a lot of countries are rightly so condemning Donald Trump for supporting his boss, Netanyahu. There was no need for this war. They were still concluding peace talks, which were actually, by all accounts, going well. But they got a tip-off that they could take out the supreme leader, the Ayatollah. Mm. So that's the reason they went for it. People don't realise that Netanyahu has been shouting for 30 years for this to happen. He has been responsible for all these wars. Like, he speaks. So obviously, like, he has something on Donald Trump, which we all know. But we'll not get into that. But what I'm saying is, like, Donald Trump and Israel together, they shot at a school and killed over 150 girls. You'll not see that on the BBC or all the mainstream news. They're showing people standing crying in Israel because their car got hit. It's an absolute disgrace. And our Taoiseach will go and shake hands with this absolute puppet. Like, not in my name, and I'm sure when I say that, I'm saying that on behalf of a hell of a lot of Irish people. this man has started a war that's going to cost us all, never mind the people's lives that it's cost.
Is there any argument that if Iran were able to develop nuclear weapons, that it could leave the whole world in greater peril, Stuart?
I would be more afraid of Israel, and they have nuclear weapons. Mm. And they won't. They have never been checked. Nobody knows what they have. They're the only country. They've never ever been checked.
They're the only country in that region with nuclear weapons. It has to be said. Yet they are the ones that feel the most threatened.
Well, they're not the ones that's threatened. Every country around them, they've bombed.
I'm saying that's their the Netanyahu's line. In other words, you know, they are threatened. They risk extinction. Yet they're the only country in that area with the nuclear weapons. I'm just stating what he said. I'm not stating anything.
Yeah, but Iran has never started a war. This is the thing that people don't realize. Iran is the most peaceful country there. But Netanyahu is so determined to wipe. He's already, like, the leader is already killed, but another one will come along, and it'll only make them all the more determined now. Like.
Do you not think that the peace talks too were potentially a way to bring people out of hiding so that they could be tracked for this operation?
That's what happened. That's what they done the last time. The last time the peace talks, should they bomb Doha to try and kill them all at the peace talks? Mm-hmm. Remember the last war they had? That was what happened. And fair play to Iran this time. Every airbase, like all these countries, if you ever look at where America has their military, they're based all the way right around Iran, and Iran's the trouble.
But Stuart,
America
isn't it,
their bases in all these countries.
Like, I understand in this day and age where everyone picks sides, but Iran really aren't the angels in this situation either, are they? I mean, upwards of 40,000 civilians, like you and I, potentially, who took to the streets saying, look, we're not really happy with the way things are going in this country, were killed by the government there. Now, That's only hearsay. There's absolutely no proof. Well, the Iranians themselves have said 7,000, right? So the Iranian administration have said 7,000.
You're saying 40 and they're saying 7. Like, even
But these are 7,000 civilians.
How many people are protesting in America at the minute? Look what ICE is doing. America's gone. Trump has this war now, and he's meant to go to Congress before a war and talk it through. He doesn't go to nobody.
I get where you're coming from. And listen, I've said an awful lot of things that align potentially with what you're saying. But are we not at a point now where we seem to choose a side and become blinded? Like, you brushed over the fact that Iran has admitted to killing 7,000 civilians in protest. Like, these aren't good guys necessarily.
I'm not saying that, but you look now at Iran. Where's all the BBC and all the CNN and that? They're not standing outside that school where all them children were killed. The reason being, because they're coloured. The press, it seems to be, like Israel, they call them the Gower, or they call them anybody that is not, like, white or taking line with the Zionist regime. They don't care.
I'm not telling anyone what news to watch or not to watch. But it's very important, I think,
yes,
that people should...
The way the news is reported...
If you let me finish my point, though, Stuart, sorry, I don't mean to be ignorant, but people should watch Al Jazeera news because they do seemingly take both sides of the story and they've got people everywhere. And
that's the only news I will watch.
Well, there you go.
Al Jazeera.
I figured
the only
that
news
out.
I will
so
watch.
You know yourself, you're getting...
A lot of big newsreaders are actually reporting from Al Jazeera. A lot of people have left the BBC and CNN and all that, and they actually work for Al Jazeera because they're the most... they're not one-sided in any way, shape, or form.
There you go. Okay,
but if you ever look, like, it's said that... it's saying that Iran has attacked... Whenever that war started, it was always self-defense. Mm. Even Britain has said for Iran not to defend itself.
I thought it quite interesting,
yeah, we heard
too.
From the last war, it was all self-defense. It's only self-defense, self-defense.
Yeah. One thing that jumped out at me as well, I thought was quite interesting, is that especially for a country like the United States that promotes free press, and freedom of speech, is that they bombed the press TV offices as well. They bombed the Iranian state TV.
That's always the first thing that Israel does. That's the first thing you do in a war.
as you bomb the TV stations and that, then you start hitting hospitals, then you start hitting schools. It's to get into people, like, it's to show them that you're prepared to go down the dirty road. Like,
yeah,
it's not about shooting the army and all this, all the bases. They'll start with that, and then it starts and it goes into press, it goes into hospitals. It just makes everybody so scared.
Like, I understand where people be opposed to sort of imperialism and Israel and the United States. I get that. And I'm not accusing you of this, Stuart, but, you know, there's lots of people I know, lots of friends and family who wouldn't last a minute in Iran. They'd be stoned or strung up by the neck. You know, women have pretty
much... Have you ever visited Iran? Iran is a very good tourist destination. People are so welcome there.
I know.
You never pay for anything.
Yeah, I do have a decent understanding of Iran from various different sources. I do have
They go to pay for a coffee and somebody else pays for it. Yeah. They're treated like royalty.
I know that.
So you can't say that people aren't treated well in Iran, because they are. Americans were always treated well in Iran.
Okay.
After everything that's happened.
Mm.
It's just one, it's this regime that has to change in Iran, but this is not the way to change a regime. They've tried it in Iraq, they've tried it in Libya, they've destroyed every country, Afghanistan, everywhere they go, they just leave a trail of
I have a sense that you know, I get where you're coming from ideologically, but the enemy of your enemy almost becomes your friend. Like, Iran is not a country I'd go to bat for because of their
civil rights. Do you think this is right
rights.
Then? What's
no,
happening
not at all. You see, that's it. Both can be wrong at the same time. Both can be wrong at the
so
same time.
So you think invading a country that you're having peace deals?
No,
what,
I said I don't. No, I think that's. I think what's happening is incredibly wrong. But that's what a point I'm saying. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. Iran.
Trump your friend.
Iran is not. No, of course not. You're not listening to me. What I'm saying is I watch on and I think, how could, without the approval of the international community, without the approval of the checks and balances, i.e., the Senate, how you can unilaterally make a decision to go in and blow a country to pieces? That is not how things work. It's unstabilizing, and it could end up in World War III. At the same time, that is wrong. I wouldn't be going to bat for Iran. I wouldn't be saying Iran is this.
Well,
they buy you free coffee
ago,
and stuff,
eight
right?
Ago they
killed 7,000 by their own admittance. They killed 7,000 of their own civilians for the cheek of saying we're not really happy with inflation in this country. We're not happy with the way things are going. So a country that will kill 7,000 by their own figures, an international figure states more, that will kill 7,000 civilians, right? Is not a country I'd go to bat for. That's all I'm saying. I respect your point of view, and it doesn't mean I agree with what
you're
saying.
Well, America's going to bat for a country that has killed over 300,000
100%,
in Israel,
exactly.
And Gaza.
They can all be wrong at the same time. So in other words, I wouldn't blindly...
They've killed over 300,000 people in Gaza,
I get
and
you.
Nobody has batted an eyelid.
100%. But don't park your morals at the door of 7,000 civilians being slaughtered in Iran either.
I am not in any way taking Iran's side. Mm. What I'm saying is the side that they were at the peace table.
It was,
when
of
this
course.
All started.
They were drawn from whatever
they
safety they had
and
blew them to bits. And God knows how many kids were killed in the process of taking out the one leader. And apparently that's fine. It's disgraceful what happened.
And it's only going to make people in Iran feel now even more hatred towards America.
Mm, yeah, okay. All right, listen, Stuart, thanks for your time. So we were speaking at the top of the show about Chrysler family's calls for a meeting with the Minister for Justice, Jim O'Callaghan. And as committed, we got on to his offices to get a response from him, and I will read that response to you right now. What occurred in Chrysler was a terrible tragedy, and Minister O'Callaghan's thoughts remain with the victims, their families and the wider community who continue to feel the impact of that day. Minister O'Callaghan, in early December, met with Mr. and Mrs. Harper alongside Minister McConnellogue while in Donegal. The minister conveyed to Mr. and Mrs. Harper that the ongoing criminal investigation should not be impeded or jeopardised in any way and allowed to proceed to completion independently. A primary investigation file has been submitted to the DPP. The DPP is wholly independent in her function, and it would be inappropriate for the minister to comment on any aspect of this process, which we didn't seek. Reading on Garda Síochána continues to progress the investigation, and Garda family liaison officers remain in direct contact with the affected families, providing updates as the investigation progresses. In relation to the call for a public inquiry, the government must be careful not to take steps that could cut across or compromise a live criminal investigation. At this point, the focus must remain on ensuring the investigation investigative processes are allowed to proceed independently and without prejudice so that the full facts can be established and so the victims, families and wider community who were impacted get answers and potentially accountability. So that is the response there. The question was, is there any possibility of a... Yeah, okay. So in other words, the question was phrased correctly to get that response. So that's all we can do. It's not all we can do. That's what we're where we're at just at the moment. Right, now, Local Enterprise Week begins today. There's lots of events scheduled around the county to support local and small businesses. And the event takes place across 31 local enterprise office branches nationwide. Brenda Hegarty is Head of Enterprise at the Donegal Local Enterprise Office and joins me now. And I must say, looking resplendent. Brenda, you're all dressed up and you've got somewhere to go, which is great. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Yes, so we are officially launching Local Enterprise Week 2026. And as you say, this is happening right across the country, organised by the local enterprise offices. And here in Donegal, we have a wonderful lineup of events right across the county, right across the 5 days. We have 22 events around the theme of Built on Belief.
Okay, now what does that mean, Built on Belief? So what's the story behind the title?
Yeah, well, I suppose every small business starts with belief. And it's acknowledging that the entrepreneur has an idea and they have belief in their idea. They have belief that with the right resources and organisation and opportunity that they can build and grow successful businesses. And even when they are facing particular challenges and you're in business and you're scaling your business, the belief is often the thing that really brings you through those challenging times.
For sure. And the one thing about our business network, which is fantastic, it's proven. Right. So you're able to show what can be achieved whilst encouraging others to say this is your potential and beyond.
Yes. So that's the wonderful thing. And there's a big focus in Donegal under Local Enterprise Week of showcasing this tremendous talent that we have right across our business sector, both in the startup and the scaling and the very successful businesses. And it's a great opportunity to bring those entrepreneurs into the arena and allow them to tell their stories. And hopefully by telling their stories, addressing the challenges, looking at how they availed of the opportunities, that other people, whether they're in business or thinking of starting a business, that they can get motivation and inspiration from those business leaders that have walked the journey and are willing to transfer their knowledge and understanding.
And in terms of some of the conversations, I think they cover everything, and it's the traditional right through to the future. You know, building a bilingual business or in a bilingual way, right up to, you know, AI, how to incorporate and avail of AI in business. So it's right down sort of to the traditional stuff, i.e., you know, celebrating our language is attractive, right through to the reality is that, you know, AI, cybersecurity, which comes with that as well, and how you might innovate. All of this is covered in various different ways. And that's just two examples of what's happening during the week.
Yeah, there's a great range of topics being explored, as you rightly say. So from communication, which is our opening event this morning, is around leadership through communication. And we've Richard Curran and Terry Prone at the event in the Radisson in Letterkenny. And then it goes right across to human resources, marketing, branding, communication. But there is a big emphasis on AI and that whole automation and how small businesses and any business indeed can understand what that means, impact for their business, and more importantly, how they can take practical steps to enable the adoption of that new technology into their business.
So part of this conversation, right, is connecting the people listening with the events that are happening. There are some online events happening and there's an awful lot of in-person stuff. So are you booked out at this stage? Are there still slots available? And how do people find out what's happening and where it's happening?
Okay, so all 22 events, there's a mixture of in-person and online. All is available to view on localenterprise.ie/Donegal. And there is booking links then to our all the events. Now, I must acknowledge all of our partners right across the enterprise agency spectrum that have put on these events. These are not just local enterprise office events. Mm-hmm. They're being organised.
It's a collab, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's really demonstration of the strong partnership that is happening right across. So there's a wide range happening. They are free, but you need to book. So please do get online. And that could be the Tourism Connect Conference in Ballybofey on Wednesday. So calling out all tourism-based businesses. We have a female women in entrepreneurship to celebrate International Women's Day on Thursday, organised by Donegal Women in Business Network. And then we're culminating with a Made in Donegal's Business Summit and Showcase
and that really,
on the Friday.
All roads lead to that really throughout the course of the week, right? So talk to us about this Made in Donegal Business Summit and Showcase on Friday.
Yeah, so this is the second time we've organised this, very successful last year. And it's really a demonstration of the success the people in Donegal, whether it's sporting stars or business leaders, that have built successful careers and businesses.
And it really was interesting. I was at it last year, and one of our panels was a mixture of, you know, business leaders. I think it was football special, Jim McGuinness, and another guest. It just escapes me at the moment. Yes. It was a year ago. But the crossover between leading a team, which is a sports team, and leading a team, which can be a business team, you know, it opened my eyes to sort of that, the crossover that you talked of there.
Yeah, leadership is relevant, well, regardless of what walk of life you're in, and there's strong parallels between leadership in business and leadership in sports. And it's a really interesting conversation where you get that business panel and sporting panel to exchange stories and tips and advice, and they're very similar and resonate regardless of what sector.
Some of the panel business from the business world, Patrick McBrarty, Jason Quigley, as you mentioned, from Sport, Katrina Jennings, Peter Mulryan, Andrea Shaw, Rosie Temple, Sean Flood, etc. So these are people who will be involved in panel discussions, sharing their insights. That obviously is going to be very popular. Are there still slots available for that?
There's still slots. Again, booking online is essential. Yeah. And then it's enwrapped with a showcase of our best in food and creative businesses. So we're going to have 35 businesses on show in the Clanry Hotel on Friday.
And I love Sean Perry, right?
But yes.
How is he getting these gigs? Hello? Over here? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, seriously?
Well, we'll certainly...
Caroline, would you talk to my agent? Because they're useless. I'm only joking.
We'll certainly have you...
Don't do that. I'm joking. I would never put you in that position, yes. Brent. I'm joking. I'm having a wee dig at Sean. He's an old work colleague of mine. It's not to have a go at you.
Well, it's great
and he's
to
very
have
good at what he does as well.
Broadcasters and commentators from Donegal moderating the panel.
Very
so Sean,
proud Ballyshannon.
Looking forward.
A very proud Ballyshannon man and a very talented man as well.
But Highland Radio are going to have an outside broadcast at the event, Greg. And we
John Breslin's there from 11 till 1.
Yes.
Which is exciting.
Yeah. So we'll be able to bring a lot of the panellists and what's happening live to the audience.
There's another interesting thing happening as well after the summit, right? It's in the afternoon, and this is sort of a public call out as well. So talk to me about that, please, Brenda.
Well, this is the summit where we will be showcasing the best in food and creative businesses that is happening right across the county. So we'd like to invite the public to come along to browse what products are on offer and maybe make
some
purchases.
And Mr. Donegal, Noel Cunningham, is hosting that as well too, which is a fantastic coup. So you're going to have the very best of Donegal's artisan food, craft producers, businesses from across the county showing off their products and services. And I stuck my head in last year too. It's a lovely little setting and it's astonishing to see the different businesses of different scales. And there were businesses that kind of were, and I can't remember the name off the top of my head and I don't want to misname them, but the growth in some of those businesses that were there last year compared to now, It's astonishing. Like, you know, you can almost see it in real time. It's brilliant.
Yes, very much so. So a lot of those that were featured last year have went on and won maybe Blast na Héireann awards and really brought their products both outside of Donegal, nationally and internationally. So as you rightly say, there is a breadth of very small businesses, but also medium and growing businesses.
And another thing too, businesses are, they're not selfish. Businesses and business people are always learning or sharing their experiences. And to get along to these events, networking, again, I'm a late adapter to networking. I always just thought it was a buzzword, you know, like let's have a blue sky meeting or something. Until I understood actually what's happening. You know, businesses are making connections, they're making deals, they're giving advice. And, you know, it's a fantastic week for, especially if you feel a little bit isolated, because I know Leo does great to support businesses, but the business community is very healthy.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I suppose what is great about Local Enterprise Week, A, is that you come out and learn and can see what is happening outside in the business world and how that might apply to you. Gives you some time to really reflect on where your business is going, maybe, and maybe start planning further growth and opportunities. It also, as you rightly say, is a peer-to-peer, so learning from others and maybe making connections maybe with businesses that you weren't even aware of or that you were aware of but never got the opportunity to maybe connect in person.
And the lady's name escapes me at the moment, but one of our panellists from last year, super successful woman, but just comes back and shares her knowledge because of the benefits of that. Although I do a lot of these things, so maybe it wasn't last year.
Yes.
Right, so we are broadcasting live from it, the John Breslin Show, around the Northwest between 11 and 1 next Friday, this coming Friday, sorry, I should say. It is to mark the fact that this wonderful panel of business and sports leadership are getting together to share their experiences. You can get on to the Leo website and book your spot for that as well. Afterwards, between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m, there is the Made in Donegal Showcase, which is open to everyone. And there were big crowds last year, and I know you want to see the same. And if you want to tap into the in-person or remote, i.e. online events that are happening throughout the course of the week, give us the website one more time, Brenda.
Yes, so it's localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
Brilliant stuff, Brenda. Keep up the fantastic work you're doing at Leo in harnessing, supporting and encouraging business. And the best of luck with the week. I know a lot of effort goes into it.
Yeah, really delighted and really acknowledge all of those that have put on the events this week. And we'd encourage as much participation, and we'd ask that each and every one of you will come out and support the events and make it a real success.
And you'll get a lovely welcome as well.
Thanks a million.
They've also suspended using X, the Regional Cultural Centre, Letterkenny. Okay. A lot of people are off, a lot of people are coming off X because it's not a very pretty place. Many people will be anxious and concerned for loved ones as the situation in the Middle East has evolved today. The Irish Embassy is advising citizens in the UAE, Qatar, Kuwait and the entire region to shelter in place. Now, shelter in place sounds, and I'm not trying to downplay it either, but shelter in place, it's a phrase that sounds very scary, right? What they mean by shelter in place is stay in your house, or, you know, don't try and go to Omar, or don't try and do this, that, or that. They're not in bunkers, right? So just, I want to make sure that I'm covering things, but not scaring the living daylights out of people either. It's just a turn of phrase. Avoid unnecessary movement and follow the advice of local authorities. Airspace has been temporarily closed and passengers should liaise with their airlines. The Irish citizens, affected and concerned family members, please contact the Department of Foreign Affairs duty officer in Dublin on 01408 2000. And I hope that's not going to be a situation where people are listening to answering machines and whatever it is. They need to move stuff. Well, look at my camera's gone all over the place. Sorry about that. They need to move staff to the phone lines to make sure what is happening to the camera here? Sorry. To make sure those phone lines are being answered. Right. Keep your calls, comments coming in to us as well, by the way. 086 60 25 000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. Or call us on 07 49 125 000. We will cover this as much as is required going forward. But unfortunately, that's where we have to leave it for today. Thank you very much to all of you who listened or watched the show and contributed to it. We really do appreciate it. And we'll be back to do it all again tomorrow morning from 9 a.m.